Well, speaking of accomplishment, we have a guest we've been waiting for with bated breath here, and she's an animal activist, so
yes.
You know all about her.
Deborah Cheehy, she's been an animal rescuer and activist her whole life. She was telling me ever since she was a little kid and they went to the pound to get a dog, she wanted to rescue all of them, and she grew up to do exactly that. And she's now written a children's book called I Like Dogs, and it's about, you know, going to the pound and getting a dog or dogs. It's just the most amazing book, and we're going to talk to Deborah about that right now.
Okay, let's get Deborah on the phone right now. Deborah, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning, Deborah.
Now, Deborah, I was reading this book, and it's so wonderful. It's about this woman who goes to the pound and adopts every dog there. And manages to find them all homes on the way home. And when I was reading this, I thought, wouldn't that be so wonderful if something like that could actually happen? And I understand that that did actually happen to you.
Yes, it did. I worked with a group of rescuers in Texas, Johnson County Humane Society. And one time I was chosen to go and pick the dogs that we were going to be taking. We could only take a limited amount because we only had so many foster homes. And when I arrived, the dog warden told me that because it was a holiday weekend, all remaining dogs were going to be euthanized. And as I walked up and down the rows and looked at their faces, I just couldn't do it. So I told them, load them all up. It was a dream I had since I was a kid. I always wanted to go to a pound and take them all, so that's what I did. And then I got in the car and realized what I'd done and didn't know what I was going to do. So I drove to my daughter's work, and she worked at a mall, and she came out, and I told her what I had done. And pretty soon, people started gathering around as we had the dogs there. I had adoption forms, and people started coming up, and they were looking for a dog. It was like the Lord had just answered my prayer, and he sent me homes for the dogs, and I ended up going home with just the four that we actually had room for.
Wow.
So how many dogs were there altogether, Deborah?
Well, it was a small shelter. There was 13 that I took that day. So it was a little rural shelter. Actually, it was in Burleson, Texas, where the first American Idol came from, Kelly Clarkson. It was that little small town. It was just a little small rural shelter, but the cages were emptied, and I left there feeling pretty good.
Now, as you mentioned, you went to your daughter's work, and this is Better Times After 50, and you're just over 50. What inspired you to write this book? Because I believe you finished it right before you turned 50.
Yes, I did. I was just, you know, I had several false starts. I always wanted to write a book for children about dog rescue. And one day I was sitting reading a magazine, and I came across a quote by George Eliot, which said, "It's never too late to be what you might have been." And I always wanted to be an author. So I went and got my notes, and I began writing, and I didn't stop until it was finished. And I finished the book on March 2nd, 2004, which was Dr. Seuss's 100th birthday.
Wow.
So it was pretty amazing, but that is what inspired me. And I just would like to inspire everybody that it's just never too late. If you've always wanted to paint or do something, just do it.
Or start a radio show.
Exactly. Start a radio show. Get the word out there.
Now, the last line of the story is, "I just remembered I also like cats," or "I like cats too," something like that. So
yes.
Do you have another book in the wings about I like cats?
Yes, I absolutely do. I have a book. It's almost finished, and it's I Like Cats. And then I also have one, I Like Birds. And it's just going to be a whole series about that are about, you know, with the animals in our lives and try to be more committed to the situation when we take an animal in.
Now, one part of the book that I really loved and that as an animal rescuer really hit home for me is at the very, very beginning of the book when the main character goes to the pound and she's saying, "Oh, all these dogs are here, you know, were they bad?" And the woman working at the pound says, "No, they weren't bad." And she goes through all the reasons that people give animals to the pound, and a lot of times they don't realize what they're doing. And the book says their owners had reasons that they thought were good. "We're moving. He's old. I should train him. I should. Won't you please take him? My kids are all grown. At least he'll be here and not home alone." But actually, the thing is, it's not you. There's actually very bad things that happen often when you take a dog to a pound. So talk a little bit about that and about what you are hoping to make people realize from reading this book.
Well, I hope they realize as they read that particular page that the reasons, they sound good on the surface, but actually, aren't they all reasons that can be solved? Can't you train your dog? Can't you spend more time with your animal? And can't you do things to make the dog's life easier? And, you know, and in your life, usually when an adoption fails, it's because of the people, not the dog. And when you take your dog to the pound, I think very few people realize that because of the overcrowding situation at the pound, your dog will only have a very short time to get adopted. And, in fact, if it's an owner release, they don't have to give it any time. The dog can be euthanized upon your leaving.
Yeah, and sometimes, isn't it only sometimes a matter of hours they have until the shelter closes that day, and that's it?
Absolutely. Like the shelter that I rescued from, their hours were from 12 to 1, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and then from, you know, like 9 to noon on Saturday. And that was how many hours the dogs had, because when they figure the days, they give them 4 days. Well, they don't. Figure that the dog is actually getting only maybe 6 hours of actual viewing time if anybody comes to the shelter to view it.
Exactly, if they even come then. Exactly. Now, you and I have both talked about animal rescue and how this has been something in our lives since we were kids. What do you hope to instill in the children that read this book?
Well, I'm hoping that by giving this a voice right now while they're young, that when they're older and the thought hits them, if they have an animal and maybe they're having a difficulty, that they'll remember the promise in the book. They'll remember how these dogs all were useful and could find a home that suited them. And I hope that kids realize that if you're going to get an animal, do research. Find out what animal fits your lifestyle. Don't get a big, huge dog if you live in an apartment and you don't have time to exercise it. Don't get a tiny dog if you have young children. Do the research, get a dog that fits your lifestyle, and you're already setting yourself up for success.
Yeah,
train it correctly, and you'll have a good match.
Yeah, you know, a lot of what you say reminds me of the movie The Horse Whisperer, where the woman says to Robert Redford, "I hear you help people with horse problems," and he says, "I help horses with people problems."
Exactly.
And yeah, I mean, it's very much like Siegfried and Roy, when Roy got mauled by the cat, and, you know, he's bleeding. He's, like, on death's door. And what does he say? Don't kill the cat. Exactly, because he understands it wasn't the cat's fault. It was his cat. It was his responsibility. It was a human mistake.
Right.
And as much as
I hate the fact that they have that kind of a show, I really do respect that he did that he took all of the responsibility.
Deborah, your book has marvelous, marvelous illustrations.
Oh, yes.
And you show such a diversity in the dogs. And that's an important message, too, isn't it? That all dogs are not cute and cuddly and all of the same size. And because people are very opinionated about dogs, I've noticed.
Yes, they are. And that's what I tried to do. I tried to take the smallest and then the largest and then show, you know, all dogs were bred for a reason. They came from just a handful of dogs, and then people came in and started making changes and breeding them to be, you know, hunting dogs or dogs that would kill rats or companion animals. And every dog really does have a purpose. And if you match that purpose with what you're looking for, you'll find the right dog. But if I could speak a minute about the illustrations.
Absolutely.
Carol Hilliard did the illustrations, and we were so lucky because we lived local to one another. And so we were able to work very closely together. And she's an Emmy Award-winning artist, and she's an art director for film and television. She does animations for museums and documentaries, and recently just did the big Lincoln show here at the Library of Congress. And her Emmy she won was for the art film Vermeer. It was a documentary about Vermeer. But she just really poured her heart and soul and brought my words to life, and I just can't thank her enough for the hard work she's done.
Is she an animal lover as well?
Yes, I'm glad you asked. She actually works for Doberman Rescue. She has two rescued Dobermans, and that's why it was so important to me to get somebody who knew what I was saying, because if you are someone who loves animals, you can bring it to life because she's lived it also. She knows what that shelter feeling is, and she knows what it's like to bring home a rescued dog that's terrified, and she really was able to, you know, bring it to life and show what dogs are like and their movements. And she also did the layout and our website because it's been so important to her that she makes it look a certain way Like, she just took it upon herself to do the layout, and she did the text and everything in the book just beautifully.
Now, did you just mention Vermeer?
Yes.
Is that because I noticed that the colors are just gorgeous. They're stained glass, sort of a Renaissance type of colors. Just lovely. Now, did you have input into the illustrations as well? You two worked as collaborators?
Yes, which is highly unusual. Usually when you're an author, you just hand your book over, and whatever happens, happens, and that's how it goes to print. But with Carol and I, well, she actually knew things before I said it. I gave her notes. We conversed back and forth and how things should look, and, you know, we were concerned about the animals in the cages and how they would look. We didn't want to make it too sad for children, but we wanted to really show what a shelter situation would be. And, you know, little things like putting the signs on, please spay and neuter, and things like that. And then she came up with so many ideas, and like the room that Amanda sits in the beginning, all of the little decorations and the wallpaper, and the color, like you say, it has such a rich golden hue to it. The book just is very beautiful.
And one part about the book that I love is that, okay, so Amanda's going through with all these dogs. At the end of the book, you've got all the dogs, like their actual pictures, not illustrations, but, and then you have their names. You know, you have like Moxie, who's the German Shepherd dog, and Goldie, who's the Pekingese, and Ruby, who's the Bloodhound. And I think it just really brings home to anyone reading this book, like, oh my God, these dogs are real. This could really happen. You know, I can really rescue a dog, and this can really happen.
Yeah, that's what was really important to me was to, when I was a child, one of my favorite books was about poodles, and they were actually live poodles, and they were had little aprons on and cooking in the kitchen, and I wanted to have live dogs in the book. So these are all, the dogs that you see pictured in the books are all rescue dogs that were actually got from a shelter or a breed rescue. And I think that people are not aware that if you want a golden retriever, you can get a golden retriever at the pound or a golden retriever rescue. If you want a dachshund, I mean, virtually every breed of dog out there, you will be able to find it on petfinder.com at a shelter. They're there, and they need help.
Deborah, the dogs that you actually rescued, were some of them high-risk dogs? They had some physical problems?
Yes, that's what I mainly specialized in. I have had blind dogs, three-legged dogs. Goldie was my dog in the book. She had seizures and could never be left alone for more than 4 hours at a time. So for the whole time that I had Goldie, she traveled everywhere with my family. She was at every funeral, wedding, baptism, everything that we did, she was there with me. And but that's what I mainly do. I have my daughter has a dog right now that has hydrocephalus, and we do take in the special needs dog because usually the shelters would just call because those dogs would be euthanized right away if no rescue stepped up to take them because in order to make it through a shelter, you have got to be the cream of the crop. You've got to be healthy, friendly, have everything going for you. If you have any strike against you, if you're aggressive, you're shy, you have a runny eye or a runny nose, you don't have a chance.
And you must be a little bit depressed when you hear, which we all have on the news now, because of the downturn in the economy, that people are dropping off dogs and cats and other animals very quickly because they don't have the money now to take care of them. And when you're talking about a special needs animal, Deborah, I should assume that that animal would need veterinary care, which
right.
might be a little costly.
Well, right now, there's actually one place, but it's in Georgia, where a veterinarian is trying to offer low-cost care, and I have a list of places that I keep that when I see people in need on either sites online, on Petfinder, trying to find a home, and they'll say, my dog has got a liver shunt. I can't do the surgery. I have a list of places that I send them to try to get them help because there are places out there that will help you with pet care. If you Google owner cannot afford pet care, you'll come up with several hits where there are organizations who will give money for emergency situations, emergency surgeries. And, you know, sometimes you can contact a breed rescue, and they might be able to steer you to a veterinarian who will take payments. But please, you know, if I could say one thing to everybody is don't give up on your animal. It's not their fault. If you're being displaced from your home, try to find somebody that will work with you and maybe foster your animal for a short period of time till you're back on your feet.
Absolutely.
Because,
I think that was true during Katrina.
Absolutely.
A lot of dogs were relocated and then got to be reunited with their owners. After
right, cause it's devastating enough to lose your home, but when you lose your best friend on top of it, it's devastating.
And I think that's part of your message, isn't it, in your book, is that that dogs are our best friends.
Yes, they are, and they're part of our family. When you get a dog, I can never imagine how anybody can leave their dog, because I used to go and see the dogs at the shelter, and I would see them waiting, and every person that passed by, the tail would wag, and the eyes would go up, and they'd be looking for the person, and then when you came in their view and they saw that you weren't their owner, their face would go down, the tail would drop, and it would happen, you know, 100 times as people walked by, and that dog was searching for that owner who had betrayed them, that owner who left them behind, and they never stopped waiting, and they never stopped looking.
And they never.
And it's a bad situation.
And they never stop loving.
Never. They never stop. They, you know, I had a dog once that was a puppy mill rescue, and I actually had her with me, and I ran into the woman who had the puppy mill, and this little, she was a little Pekingese named Casey, and she went toddling over, head down, looking back at me, and then looking at this woman who had had her in a cage for 12 years, and started to make her way, and I'm thinking, what is she doing? And then it dawned on me that even though this woman had been so cruel to this dog, to that dog, the dog was going to be loyal to her. And then I called her. I said, no, Casey, come back here. And then her tail went up, and she came flying back to me like she finally realized she didn't have to go back to that. But she would have. She would have gone back to it.
Now, you've got a website, ilikedogs.org, which not only talks about the book, but just has a fount of information about things you can do, places you can volunteer. And on both the website and in the book, you've got a promise that the character in the book makes every person who adopts a dog say to their dog and sign. And do you want to read that promise for us? Because it very much sums up your whole philosophy on what a dog is and how you should treat a dog.
Oh, I would love to. Thank you so much. This is the promise. I will not leave you out in the rain or the cold. I will love you forever, even when you are old. I will feed you and pet you every single day. I will always be there and ready to play. I will keep you in the house alongside of me. I will train you so you will behave properly. I will be your best friend for as long as you live. I will take all the love you so eagerly give.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Geraldine's crying, Deborah.
I'm so sorry.
She didn't. See, I was crying during the Beatles retro, but see, she's crying. Oh, my goodness. I hope, I sincerely, sincerely hope, Deborah, that you find a huge readership for your book and for your message.
Yeah, I mean, just for any kid that can read. Oh, you know what? Why don't you tell us a little bit about reading this book? Like, tell us maybe one story about reading this book to kids, because you do that at libraries and such.
Right. Went to a school and read it, and the kids are just so open to the message. It's just like they get so excited that here's an adult, a person who loves animals the way they do, because all children, they have that capacity to love, and to love the animal like it's a part of the family. And they just get so excited, and I have one little boy that was just so thrilled that the real pictures of the dogs were in the book. He said, who thought of that, putting real dogs in a book with cartoon dogs? And he said, are those real dogs? And, I mean, just their excitement level is just really wonderful. And that's why I hope that it really hits home with them, and they take that message home and go home and talk to mom and dad about maybe, you know, if they've got a dog outside chained to a doghouse, maybe it's time to bring that dog in. You know, if they have a dog that needs training, maybe it's time to look into that and make that dog part of the family.
Or if they're going to get a dog, maybe not go to a pet store, but go to a pound.
Absolutely. That's what Amanda says in the very first line of the book is, I will go to the shelter and not the pet store. I know the dogs there need a family much more.
I know that the Obama family came under some rather harsh criticism, because at some point in the campaign, he said, or maybe right after he was elected, that they would choose a shelter dog. And then I guess the dog they ended up having was a gift
from Ted Kennedy.
Well, you don't want to. What's the word?
You don't
a gift
want to.
Horse in the mouth,
yeah, you don't want to insult Ted Kennedy.
Yeah. Well, I looked at that in a different way, because President Obama made a great example to all of us. If everybody would go about getting a dog the way that he did, he didn't rush out and get a dog just because his daughters wanted a dog. They researched the breed of dog that would be good with people coming in and people coming out. They researched a breed of dog that would be good for a child with allergies. They researched, you know, a good training facility and sent the dog there prior to the dog arriving. They didn't get a young puppy that was going to be whining and crying for its mother. They went and got a puppy that was a little bit older. And they and I understand that the puppy was a gift from Senator Kennedy. Right. And I think that they really did the right thing. And I know people are angry because he didn't get a shelter dog. But in his defense, you know, he had to make sure that the dog that he gets was going to stay put and be. And shelter dogs are wonderful. But Michelle has never owned a dog. President Obama has never owned a dog. And his daughters have never owned a dog. And sometimes shelter dogs can be a bit of a challenge because they've been through a bad experience. So I think they did the right thing. I mean, I would have loved if they would have gotten a shelter dog. But I think in their situation, they did the right thing, and I hope people understand that and let them really enjoy this experience of having their first puppy.
I think that says a lot about his character and his personality, the way he did research it. Like
yes.
I said, actually, that gives me hope. I mean, that he is a very careful individual. If he goes about everything as carefully and as organized as he did about obtaining an animal to be part of their family, then I feel pretty good.
Right. See, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Because if everyone would just do that and say, okay, kids, we want to get a dog, but what kind of dog fits with what we're doing? You know, are we home a lot of times, or are we gone most of the time? You know, do we want a dog that is active that we're going to jog with, or a dog that's going to sit on the lap next to, you know, us and watch TV? What do we want?
Yeah,
it's
really important, especially for people who aren't home all day, to research, is this dog a barker? They do not
right.
want to have a dog that's going to bark and bother the neighbors all day.
Yeah.
And
then you have to do that debarking thing, which sounds barbarian to me. Deborah, we're out of time now, honey. We are so hopeful, as I said, and Geraldine feels it too, that you find a large, large readership for I Like Dogs.
And everyone go to ilikedogs.org. It's just, like I said, a fount of information. It's wonderful.
Yes, and you are wonderful. Thank you, Deborah, for joining Better Times After 50.
Thank you so much, ladies. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Oh, and I forgot to say, you can order the book at www.ilikedogs.org. I ordered 5 of them.
for every child you know?
Well, you know, it does make a wonderful present, because I know my niece and nephew, they've got a dog, Blackie, who's a rescue dog. And
well, I think more than that, because at first when you told me about this, this guest, Geraldine, I was a little concerned because, you know, what's the connection? But really, if you think about it, as a grandparent or as an older adult,
mm-hmm.
you almost have an obligation, I think, to help train the younger generation to be compassionate.
Absolutely.
Kids, I mean, Deborah made a good point that kids naturally like animals. Yes, but sometimes they have bad experiences. So it's part of your obligation to say, okay, that's a one-time experience that you had, my dear. But there are lots and lots of dogs out there, just like lots of people. And let's get over this.
Yes, and what was the quote from George Eliot, that it's never too late to be what you might have been?
Might have been. I've heard that before. Can we say it enough? Say it again.
It's never too late to be what you might have been.
Might have been and are now. You've been listening to Better Times After 50, and this is AdviceRadio.com Senior Lifestyle Show. And we've had a wonderful, wonderful hour, as usual.
Really, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Two things very dear to both of our hearts.
That's right. Music and animals.
Of course.
They are part of the better times. And remember, it's never too late to have them for yourself.